Chapter 10, A Much-Needed Gap.
What can be more soul-shaking than peering through a 100-inch telescope at a distant galaxy? Holding a 100-million-year-old fossil or a 500,000-year-old stone tool in one's hand. Standing before the immense chasm of space and time that is the Grand Canyon, or listening to a scientist who gazed upon the face of the universe's creation and did not blink. That is deep and sacred science. Michael Shermer.
This book fills a much-needed gap. The jest works because we simultaneously understand the two opposite meanings. Incidentally, I thought it was an invented witticism, but to my surprise, I find that it has actually been used in all innocence by a publisher whose website advertises a book that fills a much-needed gap in the literature available on the post-structuralist movement. It seems deliciously appropriate that this avowedly superfluous book is all about Michel Foucault, Roland Barthes, Julia Kristeva, and other icons of haute francophonieism.
Does religion fill a much-needed gap? It is often said that there is a God-shaped gap in the brain which needs to be filled. We have a psychological need for God, imaginary friend, father, big brother, confessor, confidant, and the need has to be satisfied whether God really exists or not. But could it be that God clutters up a gap that we'd be better off filling with something else? Science, perhaps, art, human friendship, humanism, love of this life in the real world, giving no credence to other lives beyond the grave, a love of nature, or what the great entomologist E.O. Wilson has called biophilia.
Religion has at one time or another been thought to fill four main roles in human life: explanation, exhortation, consolation, and inspiration. Historically, religion aspired to explain our own existence and the nature of the universe in which we find ourselves. In this role, it is now completely superseded by science, and I've dealt with it in Chapter 4. By exhortation, I mean moral instruction on how we ought to behave, and I covered that in Chapters 6 and 7. I've not so far done justice to consolation and inspiration, and this final chapter will briefly deal with them. As a preliminary to consolation itself, I want to begin with the childhood phenomenon of the imaginary friend, which I believe has affinities with religious belief. Binker. Christopher Robin, I presume, did not believe that Piglet and Winnie the Pooh really spoke to him. But was Binker different?
Binker, what I call him, is a secret of my own, and Binker is the reason why I never feel alone. Playing in the nursery, sitting on the stair, whatever I'm busy at, Binker will be there. Oh, Daddy is clever. He's a clever sort of man, and Mummy is the best since the world began, and Nanny is Nanny, and I call her Nan. But they can't see Binker. Binker's always talking, because I'm teaching him to speak. He sometimes likes to do it in a funny sort of squeak, and he sometimes likes to do it in a hoodling sort of roar. And I have to do it for him, because his throat is rather sore. Oh, Daddy is clever. He's a clever sort of man. And Mummy knows all that anybody can, and Nanny is Nanny, and I call her Nan. But they don't know Binker. Binker's brave as lions when we're running in the park. Binker's brave as tigers when we're lying in the dark. Binker's brave as elephants. He never, never cries, except like other people when the soap gets in his eyes. Oh, Daddy is Daddy. He's a Daddy sort of man, and Mummy is as Mummy as anybody can, and Nanny is Nanny, and I call her Nan, but they're not like Binker. Binker isn't greedy, but he does like things to eat, so I have to say to people when they're giving me a sweet, oh, Binker wants a chocolate, so could you give me two? And then I eat it for him, because his teeth are rather new. Well, I'm very fond of Daddy, but he hasn't time to play. And I'm very fond of Mummy, but she sometimes goes away, and I'm often cross with Nanny when she wants to brush my hair. But Binker's always Binker, and is certain to be there. A.A. Milne, Now We Are Six.
Is the imaginary friend phenomenon a higher illusion in a different category from ordinary childhood make-believe? My own experience is not much help here. Like many parents, my mother kept a notebook of my childish sayings. In addition to simple pretendings, Now I'm the man in the moon, an accelerator, a Babylonian. I was evidently fond of second-order pretendings. Now I'm an owl pretending to be a water wheel, which might be reflexive,